Welcome to Chirosphere, where we talk about all things chiropractic and some things not so chiropractic. I'm Dr. Ray Foxworth, your host for Chirosphere and CEO of ChiroHealth USA, the network that works for chiropractic. Today, we're in for a treat. We have with us Baron Hoig, my friend and one of the most on-fire people for chiropractic that you will ever meet. Baron is executive director of One Chiropractic, a disruptive force, I can say that, challenging the status quo within the profession. With over 24 years of dedicated service to chiropractic, Baron brings a wealth of experience and unique perspective to the table. Now, as the driving force behind One Chiropractic, Baron is committed to protecting the rights of chiropractors worldwide, literally worldwide, elevating the profession's cultural authority, and ensuring universal access to chiropractic care. So I want to get into your journey, Baron, your vision for the future of chiropractic, and the impactful work that I know that you're doing through One Chiropractic, and how it's going to change our healthcare landscape. So you've had an extensive journey in the profession. I know you've owned clinics, you've managed an association, you've done consulting, and now you're leading One Chiropractic. So those are all the what you do's, but I'm always most interested in what Simon Sinek calls your why. What gives you the fire in your belly after 24 years, friend?
You know, well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to be on your podcast here, man. I love and respect you, Doc. We go way back, even from a conversation at a convention, just understanding and getting to know each other. And I've had nothing but love and respect for you since that day. It's a God thing. That's the only thing I can really express. My introduction into chiropractic was literally, I took a job at a chiropractor's office. Didn't know anything about chiropractic, never been a patient, didn't know anyone that had ever been a patient. And I was very skeptical when I first got there. I thought the guy was a bit of a wackadoodle because I just didn't understand what he was doing. And, you know, they were making all these claims that were just contrary to the brainwashing I had had up to that point in my life. I was 19 years old. But as I just started experiencing things with patients and watching the results, and you know, I, for the sake of time, I won't go into the whole story, but I had an experience with a patient where he came in, he was the spouse of a patient that was in love with our chiropractor, and he was only there to shut her up. We've all had those patients, you know, where the spouse is there because they've been badgered to death to get there. And, you know, he gave it a shot. You know, we were Singer clients at the time. So I went to David Singer seminars and was trained in the primary script, the 4-day report of findings and all that fun stuff. And so it was just a job for me. I was just memorizing scripts and delivering them, and I got bonus. So I just showed up, did my job and went home. But this patient rocked my world. His name was Jim, and he was an old farmer. And he's like, "You can't help me. I'm arthritic. I'm old. I was rough on my body. You know, it's just what happens when you get to my age." But I said, "Give me 2 weeks. If at the end of 2 weeks it doesn't work, then I'll help shut your wife up. But let's at least give it a try." And so he did, and just changed his life. And he came into my office. And the thing that hit me the most is he thanked me for giving him his life back at 74 years old. And I couldn't connect those dots. I was like, "Wait a minute, you know, what do you mean I'm giving you your life back? You know, as a 19-year-old, I figure we're planning his funeral at 74. Like, there's no getting life back. You know, you're at the end of the journey." But it just that moment, God just used it to really just shock my heart and my mind. And I just decided at that moment that I had to understand this thing called chiropractic, because if it could have that much impact on this guy, then what is it that I'm missing? Why am I? I'm a part of it, but I don't understand it. So back in 1994, I just went on a journey, and I really just wanted to learn everything I could about chiropractic. I'm not an overly intelligent human, but I will outwork anybody, and I don't like not knowing things. So I'm the guy raising their hand, asking way too many questions, because I want to understand. Once I understand, then I can apply. And so I just went to seminars. I set myself and just needed to understand what chiropractic was. The more I learned, the more I was blown away at what I didn't know, and how I had misunderstood the body, how I had misunderstood health, how I was kind of lied to as I was growing up as an athlete, as a normal American in America's healthcare system. And I got very angry. I was very frustrated. Why did no one tell me this? You know, and I started thinking about my life and the life of my kid and the life of my dad. And what if we would have gotten them chiropractic? Like, well, maybe things would have played out differently. And so I made a commitment right then and there that I was never going to be the person that missed an opportunity to tell somebody about chiropractic, because I was so mad no one told me. And so I just got very well known in the industry as a big mouth non-chiropractor going out there, just telling the world about chiropractic. Our clinic grew like crazy. We opened up, you know, 6 more clinics. I was running multiple clinics, living the time of my life, just changing lives and getting people committed to this new mindset of health. And that's just kind of the evolution of how that took me into consulting. Then that took me into association management, took me into serving on boards of the numerous national associations. You know, but to answer your one question of why do I still have as much fire today as I did back then, partially, my daughter's a chiropractor. She just graduated Sherman.
Congrats.
My son's at Life right now. So I'm very much into this because of my children. But I'm as passionate about this today as I've ever been, because I believe our profession is in a unique period in history that if we start getting our stuff together, we can massively change the healthcare climate in our world. I just think we're in a perfect storm of things. And the purview that I have now and being able to work with chiropractic all over the world and on every different level, whether it's, you know, dealing with regulatory overreach or censorship or whatever the case that we're dealing with, animal chiropractic here in the United States, I get this wonderful purview of watching our profession starting to understand what it means to come together and collaborate. Not unify, because I don't think that's ever going to happen in chiropractic, but I do think there's an opportunity to collaborate. And so I'm very excited because I want chiropractic to be the number one healthcare choice in the world. And I think that it's actually possible if we can stop playing the same games we've been playing for 128 years and get over kind of ourselves, because honestly, the biggest opponent we've ever faced is us. We've never really faced an opponent outside of us that stopped us. We're limiting ourselves for the most part from my vantage point. And so our mission at One Chiropractic is to stop those Hatfield-McCoy conversations, straights versus mixers, all the garbage that segmented us and separated us, and start having conversations that start bringing us back together to collaborate and to celebrate the differences of chiropractic rather than be angry about it. So that's kind of my journey in a nutshell.
So, I'm very interested in the profession coming together, but I too realize, you know, it is, let's face it, we were talking about ACA, ICA, straight, and make sure that whole thing. And the reality is you can have unity without uniformity. And that's kind of been my battle cry. If we truly want to see the increased utilization of chiropractic and to be that first choice in healthcare, I think we do have to embrace some unity without uniformity. And I know, you know, we're involved with the strategic plan and you are as well. And that really is the battle cry that, you know, God love ACA and ICA for what they do, but let's face it, they got 25% of the profession that are members, and state associations have about 50%.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that pisses me off, where's the 75%? You know, right. I don't care if you want to join one or the other, but get behind something and get involved in the profession. I'm a firm believer that you will get out of this profession exactly what you put into it.
Yeah.
Most everything else in life.
You know, from my vantage point though, just to not to give an excuse, because I agree with you, sitting with your head in the sand is never an answer, ever. And that's our biggest problem. As you stated, I'm going to argue that they have less combined membership than 25%, but whatever, we'll just go with that for now. The problem is our profession has never really appropriately, I don't want to say appropriately, because I don't want to take anything away from the work that's been done from people before me, because they're all amazing people. They've sacrificed greatly. They've put tons and hundreds of hours in. But looking at it retrospectively, we didn't constructively attack problems before. We were very symptom-oriented in the way that chiropractic has dealt with its own business historically.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah, right? Right. Considering we're a profession that says we're not about that. But but if you look back at the, you know, we only really come together when we're in the midst of crisis and we band together, we beat that one crisis and then we disband again and we never really fixed what created the crisis. And so we just keep reliving the same crisis in different generations in different variations. And so that's where, you know, I think the 75% that are like, you know what, I'm done. I guarantee you, they've all contributed to something at some point, but they've lost their faith in whether it's their state association or national association, because nothing's ever really moved the needle. And to their defense, I agree. And so part of our battle cry to all of these other organizations out there, and that's why we say we're the most disruptive group in chiropractic, is because I love them for who they are, but I need them to be honest about what they're actually good at and stop doing everything else that they're not good at. If we can have organizations just really hone in on their specialty, this is why the Foundation for Chiropractic Progress is so effective right now, because they're in their lane. All they do is positive press for chiropractic. They're not getting into any of the other garbage. This is why we've been so effective with our projects like the Chiropractic Defense Council, because all we do is defend the rights of practicing chiropractors. We're not taking on lobbying efforts on other things. There are other people doing that. We don't want to do what other people are doing. We want to do what isn't being done well and do it better than anyone else, because it's the only thing we're doing.
Nope.
And if we could get groups like ACA and ICA to stop trying to be everything to everybody, if we could get chiropractors stop trying to be everything to everybody, but allow themselves to express what is their passion about chiropractic and stick in that lane and be the best at that rather than trying to serve so many masters, that's where I think the problem has led over the last, 30 to 50 years, is we've never been honest with ourselves that, you know what, we really just want to do this. And this is what we do well. Instead, we keep trying to keep everybody happy, which is why from an association perspective, having run an association, it was very hard for me as an executive director of a state association to take a stand on any one issue, because I was always irritating a high percentage of my membership because the profession doesn't really agree in much. So that's where the stalemate comes. That's where the lack of movement comes, because you're afraid if you do any one thing, you're going to piss off half of your membership and now you're going to lose your funding and all that stuff. And so that's paralyzed a lot of our organizations for so long to actually do the work that needs to be done, because they've been held hostage by their memberships. This is where I'm saying, I think we need to change our mindset, and the profession isn't a member as a large percentage because they don't see things happening. What happens when you just forget all of the players and just do the work that we all know needs to be done, right? We all want better reimbursement. We all want more access. We all want parity. We all know what the profession needs, but we're not really able to do it because we're still so busy trying to appease everybody in the process of doing it that nothing really gets done, or we never get enough of a momentum that pushes it through. And we were one of the first organizations to prove this when we created the Defense Council, and we took a stand on chiropractors have the right to choose if they want to be vaccinated. They have the right to choose if they want to wear a mask. They have the right to choose. And we defended those that wanted that choice, and we didn't care about it pissing off another percentage of the profession. We grew over 5,000 contributors, even on all sides of the aisle, because they just were glad someone was standing on a principle and moving forward. Not saying we had the right answer to everything, but it was a perfect test to show our profession will get behind an organization that's actually accomplishing something, whether they happen to agree with that particular issue or not. And that's what I'm hoping is happening. I just got done talking with the foundation, F4CP. They're growing exponentially right now because people are starting to believe that they're sticking in their lane and there's resources there. And it doesn't matter if you want to do lasers and rehab or you want to just touch the Atlas, there's a place for you with us. And that's starting to resonate again. And that's the same with our organization. I don't care how you want to practice. If you have a DC after your name, we're going to protect your right and your right to practice how you choose within the scope of your practice. So that's where I think that comes from. And I'm hoping that tide is changing.
Yeah. Being involved with the strategic plan, I think one of the things that the reason that it's working so well, and for those that aren't familiar with it, I don't want to give you a course on it, but basically the Chiropractic Summit and the Cairo Congress were at a meeting one weekend, and we did a SWOT analysis. Dr. Jay Greenstein and I were moderating that, and we looked at the strengths, the weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and we collectively realize that if we truly had a strategic plan, that there wasn't a thing on that board that we could not resolve.
That's right.
And when you, this is really, really, I think, important. Forget ACA and ICA for a minute, but most organizations focus on themselves. I mean, as you would expect them to. But the reality is, when we make our decisions through the lens of what's in it for me or what's in the best interest of my organization, oftentimes that's an entirely different lens that you look through if you're making decisions based on what's in the best interest of the patients that we serve.
Yeah,
100%. And it's when we're inwardly focused that I think we lose the potential impact that we could have on all of our patients, like I said, we want increased, you know, utilization, we want increased parity and pay. And all the time that we spend inward, like you said, the things that have gone on historically really has slowed us down. And so I am starting to see that change after, you know, my mom and dad were both chiropractors. So I've been around this since 65 or 67. And it's really interesting. After 38, 39 years, I can still say that this is the best time for anyone to be in chiropractic. Despite all the all the stuff, it just keeps getting better. I think it was Jim Parker who said it succeeds because it's right. Sometimes I say we sometimes succeed in spite of ourselves. So you've shared with what drew you into chiropractic and shaped your advocacy efforts. We know you're about challenging the status quo. What are some of the key areas or issues that you really believe need disruption or improvement in the profession? And specifically, how is, you've mentioned two things, one, chiropractic, and then you mentioned the CDC, the Chiropractic Defense Council. Kind of parse those two and help me make the distinction of what those two entities are and what has been done that is tangible at this point in your efforts.
Yeah. So I created One Chiropractic with a group of individuals back in 2016. I did it because I was extremely frustrated with the way that our profession operates. I was the executive director of the Ohio State Chiropractic Association. I had that seat for 6 years. We had done some pretty amazing things. I was very, very proud of my tenure with that organization. Had an incredible board. We really challenged, you know, how state associations should operate. You know, we reduced the amount of money we were spending on lobbying, and we put that more into building relationships with organizations and businesses in the state of Ohio to educate the effectiveness of chiropractic. So we were growing utilization of chiropractic. We had a number of insurance carriers that were really willing to utilize chiropractic differently, increase reimbursement, things of that nature. So we just shifted kind of our focus. Most associations spend a lot of time lobbying, doing legislative work, trying to change laws or protect the current scope that they have. And that's amazing work. But I felt like our job was to really go out and make chiropractic more friendly across the entire state of Ohio. And legislation was only a part of that. And our budget wasn't appropriately being used to really carry out that task. And so we did a lot of great things. We had a lot of success in that period of time. We grew our membership by over 700% during that tenure. Our budget, you know, went into the millions for the first time in the history of the organization. We were doing really good work. But then, you know, when I came in, the association was struggling pretty severely, and no one really cares about the boat when it's sinking. So you can take it and do whatever you want to it. No one cares. But once it's one of the nicest boats in the water, everyone has an opinion on what that boat should do. And so this was right in kind of the height of when Wisconsin came out with a white paper about expanding the scope to include drugs. New Mexico had successfully done that. And so we had a group of people up in Cleveland that wanted us, because of our strength at that point, to expand the scope of chiropractic to include drugs. And I just told them there was no way I was going to do that as long as I was there, because I felt like that was going to set us backward, not even from a philosophical standpoint. But we had just literally got our governor to sign an executive order mandating the use of chiropractic and other conservative modalities before you do an opioid. We were the first state in the country to get that done. And now you want me to go and lobby and ask for us to be able to do drugs because we can somehow do it better? Like, I was like, absolutely not. And it was a board decision. You know, I didn't need to make that unilateral decision, but we were just like, we're not using the resources for that. Well, they didn't like that answer. So they started running people against people on the board, and it turned into this massive battle. And I'm sitting back going, you have got to be kidding me. This is why this profession doesn't ever really, it's like we're allergic to success. We finally have everything going our way. And there was a group of people that didn't like it. So they started messing with elections and running people. And we have all this contention on a board that otherwise was really good. And I just said, this is crazy. I spent all my time dealing with internal fights rather than doing the work that I was hired to do. And I just said, I can't do this anymore. And I'm not gonna be a part of this. I'm not gonna sit here and do this. So there was a quote from Buckminster Fuller that really rocked my world at that time. And it says that you cannot change an existing reality by fighting it. You have to create a new model that makes the old model obsolete. And so it was then with a group of individuals, we said we needed to create an organization that wasn't a membership organization, but it was still a nonprofit. So we created a directorship, which means it's a nonprofit that functions like a corporation. So you still have the accountability, the visibility. You can't, you know, do whatever you want. There aren't shareholders making money. But I wasn't held hostage to membership. Essentially, people were paying with their checkbook. If they liked the work we were doing, they were going to continue to support it. If they didn't, they would stop. But I didn't have to stop and have membership meetings and have to have board meetings. And, you know, when there was a crisis, we could just move on it and make it happen. And so we created the organization. You know, we went through a number of years trying to figure out exactly what the purpose of the organization was. I had the framework, but I didn't really know exactly what we were doing. Yeah. It was kind of funny period of time, really. We get in the room, we all got excited, but we're like, what are we going to do? And we're like, well, I don't know. And so, you know, long story short, through a series of things that had happened, you know, we started taking on the military, the issue of the military, and getting chiropractors as commissioned officers within the military. As a matter of fact, ChiroHealth USA was one of the first to help support us when we initially started that process to give us the startup money to be able to really hire a lobbyist and put a plan together and go after that. We knew it was going to be a long game. Nothing moves quick in Washington, especially when you're dealing with the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so we've been dealing with that now for about 5 years, and we've made a lot of great inroads. I'm very pleased with the work that we've gotten accomplished and the relationships we have now and, you know, the spinoff of a number of things on that. But it really in 21, right after COVID, someone had pitched to me this concept of what if the profession had a Navy SEAL type defense team in place that was made up of attorneys, lobbyists, PR firms, researchers, content experts, all of them all teched up on chiropractic so that anywhere in the world that chiropractic was under attack, we could deploy this team and eradicate the problem immediately, very similar to what a special forces unit would do. And I was like, that'd be incredible. At that time, we had British Columbia that had just taken away routine x-ray rights from chiropractors. We had Australia that had just put in place a policy to restrict chiropractors from seeing children two and under. The Texas Medical Association had just finished attacking the chiropractic scope, trying to remove the word neurological from it, which would have taken away our ability to do exams and diagnose. And so we had these pockets of where our profession was being attacked. And there was no organized effort with any of it. It was just wherever we had a couple of chiros that were strong enough to raise some money and hire an attorney. And it was all bootstrap type stuff. And it none of it, I mean, as I give such credit to those individuals, but none of it was really going to fix the problem because it wasn't sustainable. It wasn't organized enough to be able to fix those problems. So that's where the idea of the Defense Council was pitched to us. And I'm like, oh, I have the perfect organization. Like we were built for this type of work. So One Chiropractic is the organization. Our mission is to make chiropractic the number one healthcare choice in the world. Underneath it, we have projects that we have initiated. We have a C3 foundation that's called Health Missions, where we do mission trips solely for the purpose of creating infrastructure for chiropractic in areas of the world that does not have chiropractic infrastructure. It's not mission trips for college students to get 100 adjustments under your belt. It's literally, we're going there specifically to build infrastructure to make sure that chiropractic grows appropriately in those countries. We have the Chiropractic Defense Council, which is our defense side of it. And then we also have what we call Operation Backbone, which is the military work that we're doing as well. So One Chiro is the organization, and then we have our project. Similar right. to ChiroHealth USA, Legal Shield, you know, you have your different right. products underneath that umbrella.
So basically the CDC is the Ghostbusters. Who are you going to call?
Correct. 100%. 100%. And, you know, it's been interesting because as God's timing is always perfect, you know, when we launched the CDC in July of 21, and then in August of 21 was when the first mandate came down in the U.S. that chiropractors had to be vaccinated in order to continue to practice. That was in California. Yep. So we had literally just launched this group, and then here's our first crisis, like right here in our homeland. So we grew very quickly, and I'm very proud of the work that we did. We successfully defended chiros in all seven states. We sued the state of Rhode Island and put back the religious exemption feature. You know, we were very successful. And then when the proverbial poo hit the fan in Australia and New Zealand, those chiropractors were told by U.S. chiropractors about what we had done. So we were requested to go into those countries. And I'm very proud to say that we won over 750 cases in Australia defending chiropractors' rights to practice unvaccinated. We were the only group that was doing that work. We hired up to 15 attorneys between the two countries in New Zealand and Australia. And every single person that we represented, we were successful and we defended their rights. And so we had over 1,000 people in Australia connected to us, and we were guiding them every step of the way through the shutdowns and through the draconian efforts. Our legal team was incredible. And we still, to this day, I think right now we're 875 cases in O. We've never lost a case that we've taken on anywhere in the world.
Amazing. That's and better than Morgan and Morgan and Morgan and Morgan.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, I mean, to be completely transparent, we only take cases we're pretty confident we can win.
Well,
but, you know, we do a due diligence before we take something on.
Yeah.
But I'm very proud. We now have 47 attorneys worldwide on retainer. We're in 9 different countries. We're taking on issues of censorship and regulatory overreach. People don't know this, but in British Columbia, Canada right now is probably some of the scariest legislation I've seen anywhere in the world that they put through that's going into effect this summer. It's called Bill 36 that they put through, but it essentially gives the government almost complete control over healthcare. So just one element that is super scary, if whether it's an anonymous complaint or not, if there's a complaint filed against any healthcare provider, you're suspended during the investigation.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, that's not okay. I mean, that's just, I mean, that's going to be, especially in our world where people love to file complaints against chiropractors that are 90% of the time erroneous and have no basis. But, you know, and you know how long it takes for these things to get processed, right? You're talking months to a year. And this bill says that you're out of business until we concluded our, so you're guilty until proven innocent, essentially.
That's nuts.
They also created a list of all of the vaccines that they as a government feel are required for healthcare providers. If you don't have everything on that register, you cannot gain registration or a licensure in that province.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take about a 30-second break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back with you shortly. Well, we are back with my friend, Baron, and really taking a deep dive on his journey through this profession and the impact that he's having. And I got to tell you, it is absolutely amazing. You know, I've known you a long time, but I did not know the depths to which you have gone to really fight for the profession. You got more fight in you for chiropractic than some chiropractors I know, but it's just awesome to hear. So I want to pivot a little bit.
Yeah.
Stephen Covey, one of my favorite authors, said in the 7 Habits of Highly Successful People to seek first to understand. And I know there was some resistance when you rolled out the Chiropractic Defense Fund. What do you want people to understand about the effort, and maybe what misperceptions would you like to lay to rest?
Yeah. You know, I, as a human being, as Baron, I have my own opinions and my own philosophy on things.
I know.
I'm not shy to put them out there. So when we rolled out One Chiropractic inherently, and then obviously the Defense Council is one of our lead projects, it was automatically thought that because Baron believes a certain way, that these were going to be vehicles and tools to push Baron's agenda or Baron's belief of where chiropractic should go. And I'd be ignorant to say that there, you know, if I'm running the ship, there's always going to be a little bit of my belief and heart in it. But I want people to understand that, like you, right, you practice in a completely different way than I practice in my clinics. But I celebrate that. Like, I absolutely love that there are clinics like yours, because it's absolutely necessary. It's not how I wanted my clinics or businesses that I wanted to run, because there was way too much brain damage and staff and stuff that I didn't want to get into. But I'm glad there are people that wanted to get into that. If you have a decompression clinic, that's not how I want to practice. I still love the adjustment. Not saying you don't, but that, I just remove the variables. I just adjust and they go. And that's just the way that I built my clinics. But I love that other people do that stuff. I love low-level laser. I love all of those things. So I think the misconception that we had initially was, because I'm so opinionated and I would probably be classified in the philosophical side of the profession, that I was somehow going to take part in this generational battle of saying my way's right, your way is wrong. I don't believe that way at all. I want to celebrate the differences. We need an organization in this profession that you don't have to fly a philosophy flag in order to be a part of it. And that's been the problem with ICA, ACA, is there are parts of both that I think every chiropractor agrees with, but because they've been labeled as one or the other, people aren't going to be a part of either. And so I think the misconception of our organization is that it has some philosophical agenda, and it doesn't. Our agenda is to make chiropractic. And that means whatever chiropractic is to you, you know, as long as it's within the scope and you're not doing anything illegal, then I don't care what you do in there. And I'm going to defend your right to do it. As a matter of fact, one of the cases we took on was for the physicals for truck drivers. There were certain payers and certain businesses that wouldn't accept those physicals from chiropractors. So I don't do that. I personally wouldn't want to do that every day. But if you do, and it's legal and allow for you to do it, well, damn straight, I'm going to fight to make sure you have the right to do it. So that's probably the biggest myth. The defense counsel is literally just here to defend the rights of practicing chiropractors. If it's a systemic issue that endangers the ability of chiropractors to be able to offer the services that they legally and appropriately and are adequately trained to offer, we are going to fight to make sure that that's done. What we're not is we're not legalese. If you know, have an insurance company that isn't reimbursing you for a procedure, we don't get involved in that. We're involved in systemic issues that affect the entire profession. And that's the big thing that I want people to see us as. And this is another unique thing to understand. I have great relationships with NCMIC, with ChiroSecure, in Australia with Guild. These are the malpractice carriers. And I make it a point to go to them to explain the type of work we're doing, because we work hand in hand with those organizations to help mitigate their risk, but also make sure that we take on the issues that they're not going to take on. We will take on the principled oriented issues that they can't take on as a malpractice carrier, even though they may agree that this is kind of a shitty thing happening, but they just can't. That's it, doesn't fit in their purview. Yeah,
that's not their mission.
But we can take that on. So we communicate hand in hand to make sure that those things that are happening are properly defended and killed right where they're at, so they don't grow. And that's the biggest thing that we want people to understand. We're like the fire department. We're like the police department, right? Hopefully you never need to call them, but you want them funded, because the day that you do, you want them to be there and you want them to be strong and intact to be able to get it done. So that's kind of the way that we've done this. And we're going to protect anybody that has a DC after their name if they're being targeted, if your rights are being violated, and make sure we're removing those restrictions.
You know, I know we both miss our friend Tom Clapp. Mm. Tom and I, for those that don't know Tom has did an amazing work in bringing organizations together in states where there were two and turning them into one. And Tom and I were enjoying an adult beverage one evening, and we actually talked about putting a skit together of two dentists sitting in a bar, and they're at a dental convention. And one dentist leans over to the other. He said, "You see that guy over there? He does braces and cosmetic crap. He's not a real dentist." And then the other guy says, "Well, you see that guy over there? All he does is fillings. He really hadn't evolved. And I mean, he's just a pain doctor."
Yeah.
And while that sounds funny, that so could true. Be us sitting at the bar.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing and what we're finally beginning to embrace, I think, as a profession, and it's just going to take some time. If you look at the medical model, when it started out, everybody practiced the same. But what tended to happen over time? Specialization, certain focus. So you've got doctors that are doing CBP, structural care. You've got guys like my practice, which was more pain oriented in a musculoskeletal setting. You got docs that are doing nutrition. So we're starting to see some differentiation within the profession. But the challenge is, how can we get doctors? I think that the challenge for the profession in bringing about some unity is, everybody doesn't have to practice the way that I do. If they gravitate towards that, great. They're still a chiropractor. If they gravitate towards that, great. They're still a chiropractor. And I think it's this one size fits all. You know, it's one thing to say, "Hey, I want to do musculoskeletal care." And if you don't, you're not a chiropractor.
Right.
You know, it flies in the face of the evolution of any profession. And I don't care what profession it is, that differentiation occurs over time. And hopefully we're maturing to the point where we're okay with, if you know, if you don't want to adjust people and you're a chiropractor and you believe in wellness and you want to focus on nutrition, that's okay. That doesn't mean you lose your DC degree.
That's so right.
It's something that happened to me early on. I was asked to join a group of docs at a rehab center, not for problems, but for musculoskeletal rehab. And when the CEO of the company of that rehab facility found out, he shut it down. Just completely shut it down.
Just because you were involved.
He did not want a chiropractor on his campus. And I'll never forget the conversation with my good friend, Raul. And I told him, I said, well, you know, some things only change one funeral at a time.
I
literally picked out the x-ray, the carpet, everything that was going to go into the space that these physical medicine docs wanted me to be a part of.
Yeah.
Well, fast forward about 3 years, I get this call from Raul. And I said, what's up, Raul? He said, he's dead. Come on over. And so, you know, I know there will be some that it's going to take a few funerals before some people can be okay with there's more than one way to practice chiropractic. Yeah. And because I choose different than yours, doesn't mean you lose your DC
degree.
And
here's what I want people to understand. And because I've sat in just about every room that I can sit in this profession. And I've talked to some of the biggest names. I mean, we do it together in the summit, right? We sit with some of the most influential people that are in this profession. And it's so funny to me how small-minded the average chiropractor can be. You know, they find their one thing and they just stick with it. And that's the only thing that they think the world operates in that particular manner. But, you know, when I teach seminars, which I don't do as much as I used to, but when I do, I'm like, do you have any idea that if we would get this concept that we need to celebrate our differences and we need to be thankful that there are chiropractors that practice differently than we do? Because if we would just inter-refer and kick the people out of our practice that shouldn't be in our practice because we're too busy trying to keep them happy to give them the type of care that they want and we don't feel congruent with it, whether it's Medicare, whether it's personal injury, whether it's work comp, whether it's major med, but we could inter-refer and we could just say the guy down the street does work comp really well. I won't play the game. I don't want to deal with it. He's a great chiropractor, but he knows the game. He's going to make sure you have the best care and your benefit covers as much of it as possible. You need to go see him. We specialize in wellness. We're here when you're ready to pay for it yourself and you want to stay healthy and not get sick. That's where we excel. But right now you need chiropractic, but you need to get it there. And then the guy at the work comp says, okay, your claim's done. We don't do wellness very well, but you're going to want to keep this under control because this is going to be a chronic issue if you just let it go. I recommend you go back to this office because they do really well. You know what I mean? If we just did that instead of, we spend so much money trying to attract people, but then we lose the majority of them because we're not willing to celebrate the differences of the people in our community.
You know, I think that is one of the challenges of, I've had this conversation with several college presidents. I think one of the challenges that we have or have had historically in our educational process is that we're taught to be a one-man show or one-woman show. I'm going to do my own exams. I'm going to do my own x-rays. I'm going to do my own this, that, and the other. I had the privilege of starting the chiropractic program at a VA medical center here. And I really saw what collaboration looks like. In the medical model, from day one, physicians are collaborating with the various specialties, with the different approaches. You know, there's differences in how a neurologist or a neurosurgeon versus an orthopedic surgeon approach a case, but they're willing to collaborate. Yep. Yep. And in chiropractic, for whatever reason, we look at our fellow practitioners, fortunately, as competition. And I'm here to tell you, there is no shortage of chiropractic patients.
No,
there's only a shortage of people who know what we can do to help
100%.
Them. 100%. And again, you know, and I don't want to beat up on our profession that, you know, we're dysfunctional, that we're dysfunctional and we can't get along. The reality is wherever two or more shall gather, there's going to be differences. Otherwise, I'll promise you, you can't drive through a town that there's not a First Baptist Church. And you know why there's a First Baptist Church?
Because there's other Baptist
churches. There's a second and a third and a fourth. I think it's a human nature thing. We just feel it in our profession because of the circles we run in and the conversations we hear.
But I think there is something important to us accepting the responsibility for why things the way they are rather than blaming everybody. Like if I could just get people to say, okay, I agree. then at least that I shoulder responsibility. Then that's where the exciting stuff happens, because then we can fix it. But yep. as long as we're still blaming someone else and we're a victim, we're never willing to actually fix the problem. We just want to sit in the comfort of the misery yep. that we've been in. And we have a certain, that's the apathy that exists in our profession, is it's just never going to get any better because it's not my fault. It's someone else's fault. Yep. So yeah, although I agree, I don't want to browbeat, but I there does need to come a point where we have a reckoning that we accept our responsibility for why things the way they are so that we can move forward.
Yeah, that is critical. I shared with someone yesterday, again, a Stephen Covey thing was, he says, when you think the problem is out there, that is the problem.
Yeah.
And I was making the point that, you know, historically chiropractic and medicine didn't get along, and we would gripe and complain, well, why don't they refer? Why don't they understand us? And when you take that mindset and the problem is them, that means yeah. they own fixing the problem. And that's right. not their job.
That's but right.
what I did in my practice and to get myself integrated into healthcare beyond just the chiropractic practice was I began to understand that it's my responsibility, that I have control over the way they think about me and what I do. And yeah. I can't change their perception just sitting in the four walls of my office. You got to show right. up. You got to get out there. You got to be willing to have uncomfortable conversations, put yourself in uncomfortable situations, and take ownership of why is it like that versus sitting back and say, you know, woe is me.
Right.
All right. Well, we're kind of coming around the bend here for docs that want to support the effort of One Chiropractic and the Chiropractic Defense Council. How do they get involved? How do they get in touch with you, Eddie?
Yeah, it's very easy. And this is one of the geniuses of the way we built this. Because of the type of work we do, it's a long, sustained battles. So all we really ask of people is $33 a month. So it's designed to be very small, 33 after the 33 principles in chiropractic. And you know, we don't want you to fund us and not fund somebody else. So our goal was to keep it low, keep it something that doesn't even really catch your eye on your credit card statement so that it keeps coming, but it sustains and rehappens. So you can go to defendchiropractic.org, defendchiropractic.org. And then right there, there's a button that says contribute now. You can do the 33 reoccurring. You can do a one-time gift. You can do whatever you want. But our goal is to get 10,000, you know, individuals giving the 33 a month so that it funds us to really be able to be, we could take on pharma. We could take on medicine. We could take on anyone that wants to come at us because we, not only do we have the economic resources, but we also have the network of people that we can direct and guide in the midst of the battle, which was ultimately our key to success during COVID, was by the snap of a finger, we could get 1,000 people to move left. We could get 1,000 people to move right. So we'd love you to be a part of it. Again, defendchiropractic.org, and you have all the information you need right there.
Good deal. So got some fun questions for you. Who's your hero? Who's your hero and why?
My dad. And because the impact that he proved the impact that one person can have on so many facets of the world by just loving, serving, and making sure that you're making a difference.
I know you're going through a tough time with that now. And so thoughts and prayers are with you.
Thank you.
What talent do you have that most people don't know about?
Well, people in the Cairo world typically know about it, but I'm a pretty dang good karaoke singer.
Yes, you are. Really surprised me when I heard that at one of the meetings. What's the worst job you ever had?
Probably a fry cook at Wendy's. I hated the grease and emptying the grease bin, man. That was disgusting.
Yeah, my kids used to work at what was called Penn's Catfish House, and I'd want to burn their clothes when they came home.
Just disgusting.
Yeah. What do you think you would be doing if you weren't in chiropractic today? What other path would you think you might have taken?
I'd like to say a porn star, but I'm not sure I'm equipped to be able to pull that off. But, you know, I would say I would love to be a coach.
If they arrested you for that, are you saying there'd be a lack of evidence or what?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Keith, exactly. You probably want to cut that in your editing.
Yeah, okay? Maybe. We'll let Keith handle that one. But I would probably be a coach. I love sports. I played sports growing up. I coached my kids. I would probably be, you know, a gym teacher and then a coach.
Got it. Thanks for spending some time with us today, and thank everyone for listening to the Chirosphere podcast. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and let us know who you'd like to hear from in the future and maybe what other topics you'd like us to cover, and we'll do our best to deliver on those. If you learn more about ChiroHealth USA and how we can help you develop a profitable discount strategy that will help grow your practice, increase your income, and most importantly, your profitability, call us at 888-719-9990 or visit our website, CHUSA.com, to find out why ChiroHealth USA is the network that works for chiropractic and for you. Thanks, Baron.
Appreciate it, Guy. Thank you.
You bet.